Today on Movie World Eyes, we review Mistress America and Digging for Fire. It's time for Movie World Eyes. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie World Eyes is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings all.
Hello.
Hi.
Happy Labor Day weekend.
Happy Labor Day weekend.
Yes, as we eat delicious cake.
Bundt cake.
Yes.
I love cake.
Tell everyone what a bundt cake is.
Yes, what makes a bundt cake so?
Bundt cake is just a little morsel of moisture-filled deliciousness.
Do you know why it's called a bundt cake?
Because it's the shape of the cake.
Yeah.
So typically bundt is with a hole in the middle, but these are little buntinis.
So they don't have a hole?
No, they don't have a hole.
So basically they're cupcakes?
Sort of, right. But they're not full of cream cheese frosting, just a delicious amount.
They look like they're full of cream cheese frosting.
They just look so good to me.
I think it's a scam. I want my hole back.
No, but you can get.
You want your? I think that it might be the hole actually.
But you can get
the big ones.
You can actually get a big one at the bundt cake store.
Oh,
you can. We got buntinis because we wanted a mixture of flavors.
I'm not convinced.
Okay, well I'll eat yours.
Actually, they're very tasty. We have red velvet and lemon.
And mine are already gone.
Rashmi and
I had pineapple upside down and a red velvet.
Mine were gone too. Now I'm licking the frosting.
Do you want another one?
Maybe later, yes. It's very delicious.
They're very good, aren't they?
Yeah. And I hate frosting usually.
Really?
I hate frosting.
I love everything about cake.
Yeah, this is a cream cheese.
But this is almost like a yogurt-y thing.
See, that's what Joe said.
It's like yogurt.
Because we were talking about, do you like bundt cakes or sprinkles? Right. And Joe said he likes sprinkles more than bundt cakes.
Rashmi eats yogurt every day.
Yes.
Every day. Like savory and sweet. And it's just like one of your favorite food substances of all time.
It's true. And I never made the observation. Joe made the observation. I eat yogurt every single day. And he's right.
It's the best thing for your stomach and your intestine.
Correct.
The best. Honestly.
Well, better than not if you live with Rashmi.
No. it's so good for your digestive health.
Is that because it's full of bugs?
Yes, it's good. It replenishes the natural flora of the intestine.
There you go. That's why I have really good movement, Joe.
Oh, dear.
Well, Joe's always been jealous. Let's just put it out there.
For the record, as a regular yogurt eater, I'm very regular as well.
Yeah, but Joe's a bit jealous because I have really good movement, like four times a day.
Of all the things to be jealous of, I am totally not. You think I'm jealous. I'm so not jealous.
No, but it's a comment. It's a conversation we've had about how
we are oversharing.
Already. I know we are oversharing. Didn't you once marvel at my ability to be so regular?
No, you marvel at your ability to be regular. from the early days of dating, she used to be like, "I go when I wake up in the morning, and it's good." And I'm like, "That's very nice for you."
What's a good segue from bowel movements into movies?
I don't know.
I don't think there's any recovery.
I'm going to do a jarring segue into our Netflix picture of the week.
Oh, that does match mine.
That does work. Okay.
It does work for mine.
Okay, go for
it. So this segment of the show, just as a reminder, is I can't find anything on Netflix. Is a comment that we often hear. So we thought that as our service to you, our listeners, we would try and pick out a couple of movies each week and give you some recommendations of things that maybe you've missed or maybe we just think are so awesome that they're available on Netflix or maybe that were at a film festival that we've been to. So...
And this fulfills both the criteria and it's a great segue.
Segue away.
Okay, so my recommendation for this week is a movie called The Mule. And we got to see this at South by Southwest last year. So South by Southwest 2014. And it's actually based on a true story that was set in 1983. And basically it's about, it's an Australian movie, which I love. I love Australian movies. They have this particular type of humor and rawness and reality about them, which I really enjoy. Strictly Ballroom being one of my all-time favorites. Anyway, I digress. So this is basically about a naive man who basically has lethal narcotics hidden up his bottom. Oh. And he is actually detained by Australian Federal Police. And basically, you know, he tries to be a mule for the first time, hence the name of the movie, The Mule. So this is actually stars Hugo Weaving, Angus Sampson, John Noble, and Leigh Whannell. And we got to do a Q&A with the makers of the movie and the actors, and they were phenomenal. So great movie. It's funny, it's dark, it's twisted, it's messed up, and it's got a lot of movement in it.
Oh, dear. Okay.
Brilliant movie. And Joe, you saw this one too.
I did, indeed. I can absolutely vouch for the scatological humor that this movie has.
Yeah.
Good.
Great Yasti. Movie. It's streaming right now.
What's your pick? Yes.
So, I have so many movies on my Netflix pick, only on my one. Next queue, you're that I'm having difficulty even to pick one. So, it's such an embarrassment of riches. The one I'm going to pick for today is a cute little movie called Alex of Venice. And I saw it at the Tribeca Film Festival last year and was really hoping the movie would find distribution. And, you know, through whatever means, it's now landed up on Netflix. This is a, you know, cute little movie with a ton of heart. I would recommend it to everyone. It's directed by Chris Messina. If people know, Chris Messina is, you know, a very fine actor who has been in many Woody Allen movies. He's on the Mindy Kaling show. This is his directorial debut. And it's essentially the story of an environmental lawyer who lives in Los Angeles. And one day her husband, after he brings their son back from school, tells her that he needs to find himself. And he's leaving them and he doesn't know when he's going to come back. And so all of a sudden, she becomes overnight a single parent. And she recruits the help of her sister, who is completely crazy, and her dad is played by Don Johnson, that Don Johnson from Miami Vice.
Who I love.
And it's just really a coming of age. It's about this woman finding herself in the world after this devastating effect. And, you know, it sounds cliched, but it's done with so much heart. It's a lovely, lovely film. Please watch it. Alex of Venice.
I actually put that on our Netflix queue just today.
And thanks for your pick last week, by the way, the Skeleton Twins. We did get to see that.
Yes. How good is it?
Amazing.
Brilliant. Yes. Brilliant.
my pick is going to be linked to this episode, which is we have the movie Digging for Fire, which is written and directed by Joe Swanberg. And my pick is Drinking Buddies. That's his movie from a couple of years ago. We saw it at South by Southwest. Blew my mind. It had Olivia Wilde in it, and Jake Johnson, who I think is also in this current movie. Just a fantastic, very improvised movie. I think that's Joe Swanberg's kind of style here. But that movie had Anna Kendrick, Olivia Wilde. Again, it's kind of that 20, 30-something crisis type movie that we see a lot of this type of thing, but this one's just so well done. There's, you know, the typical kind of things that people go through at that age about relationships and am I with the right person and do I want to settle down and get married. Just a really, really well done movie. Very improvisational, relaxed style to it, but just one of the best performances I've seen that particular year was with Olivia Wilde in that movie. So go see Drinking Buddies.
And it's got quite a bite to it. You know, that movie's got it. It gets very dark very quickly.
Yeah, it does.
Yes.
Yeah.
And yeah, caught me off guard in so many ways.
Great performances in that movie, yeah.
Blew my mind and was one of my favorite movies that year. So here it is on Netflix. I mean, you don't have to do anything other than push a button and watch that. So three recommendations.
Watch away.
So let's get into our reviews for the week. What should we start with?
Mistress America.
All right.
Okay, so I'm just going to leave this as a lonely college freshman's life is turned upside down by her impetuous, adventurous, soon-to-be stepsister. So this is directed by Noah Baumbach and written by Noah Baumbach, Greta Gerwig. And then it stars Greta Gerwig, Lola Kirk, Seth Berish, and a whole ton of other people. Some surprises, actually, as well.
Now, Noah Baumbach's been busy this year. He had, at least earlier in the year, the While We're Young.
Yes.
Which had mixed reviews, especially from us, but with I think I quite like that movie.
Yes.
He's been busy. He's prolific in many ways, like his hero, perhaps, Woody Allen.
Yes.
Yeah, and Joe, I know you sent us a great article comparing Noah Baumbach with Woody Allen. I think the name of the article is Noah better than Woody or the new Woody?
It probably shows, but I get all of my movie-related information from that terrific movie source, TheEconomist.com.
Yeah, that's right.
As most people
that's
do,
right.
Of course.
Including all the porn stuff that Joe reads and tells us about Yazdi.
But no, it's funny. They have an art section. I'm an avid reader of The Economist. I've been reading it for years. But they have a books and art section, and they do the occasional movie review. And they spoke about this movie and its director extensively, drawing a lot of parallels to Woody Allen. So great article, TheEconomist.com. Go look it up. But why don't we do our review, Yazdi?
What do you think?
Why don't you start, Yazdi?
So this might be one of the best movies of the year. It's as simple as that. I just loved it. I love everything about it. And I can explain why. Easily one of the best movies of the year.
Joe.
I don't feel that way. Just get that off my chest right away. But yeah, you know, this movie has a lot of things that are generally turnoffs for me. It has a lot of contrived setups, quippy, fast-fire dialogue, and some implausibility around the characters, which I generally find annoying. But for some reason, it all fell to place here. And I think, for me, that reason is very much Greta Gerwig. I love her as a screen presence, and I think she made good on situations that I think at times felt very forced. She co-wrote this character. Mm-hmm. She co-wrote this script. But she inhabited this role in a way that just made everything fall into place for me. And I think despite the movie's many contrivances, I really had a lot of fun watching this. I kind of took it for what it is, but I was just mesmerized again by Greta Gerwig.
So I agree with both of you. I think this is a coming-of-age movie without the usual tropes. It's quirky fun, a little precious at times, but adorable and meaningful. And, you know, when Noah Baumbach gets it right, when that writing team gets it right, they literally knock it out of the park. Joe, I'll add to what you're saying. I think Greta Gerwig was amazing, and I love everything that Greta Gerwig's ever done. I'm one of her biggest fans. But I think she was matched by Lola Kirk, a brilliant performance by that lead actress, and mesmerizing to watch both of them together. I think this was another romance-type movie where we had watched a movie like this before. There are two girls. I think it was, I can't remember the name of it. When the two girls run like a call center.
Oh, yeah, for a good time call.
For a good time call. Rather like that, I felt like this was almost like a bromance, and I don't know what they call it when it's two women, but very sweet movie. I really, really enjoyed this.
We need to coin a phrase.
For?
A female bromance. A cismance would just sound terrible.
Fromance.
But there's an opportunity here to shape the culture.
Yes.
Yes.
Anyway, let's get back to the movie. So, Yazdi.
I just posted my list of the best movies of the year in the first half. Even taking all of those movies into consideration, if today, September 5th, I had to pick the best screenplay of the year, I would pick, you know, either one of Noah Baumbach's films, especially this one. I think the script for this is so wonderful. It's so witty. It kind of resonates at the same level that I do. I think there is a very...
You're a witty female.
I'm a witty female, yes. I'm Greta Gerwig in different skin.
In drag.
But no, I think there is a very deliberate artificiality. There's an artifice about the way people say things. It takes a while to get used to it. But there's also an underlying authenticity to it. You know, so Gerwig's character comes off initially like such a construct, such a plot device, right? She's the one who's going to open up the other character. But with everything that she says, I mean, I cannot wait to watch this movie again. I hope as part of the year-end screeners, we get the screenplay for this movie, because in the moment by moment, I wanted to write every piece of dialogue that was coming out of their mouths. I wanted to write it. So for the dialogue alone, I think it's great. But I think the movie also does something very unusual in that, you know, with Frances Ha, which was the other collaboration that Greta Gerwig had with Noah Baumbach, and this movie, they're kind of completely abandoning the tropes of, you know, romantic comedy and male-female stuff. And it really is kind of going into this uncharted territory of friends, you know, kind of being, you know, building very meaningful relationships. And in this case, you know, two people recognizing each other's faults. And it doesn't pull any punches. Each character, the two leads, are very, very honest about the other person. And so I like that. There's nothing quite like it. It was just delicious. I loved it.
I mean, I think much as Greta Gerwig's character is a contrivance, I think from the, because I feel like it's written from the other character's point of view, mm-hmm. who's kind of idolizing Greta Gerwig. And so I kind of like to think of it as when you're that young and you're trying to find yourself, there are people who you kind of latch onto and who you want to be like. Mm-hmm. And you admire them because they have those qualities that you wish you will have one day. And Greta Gerwig has this freedom and she's stylish and she, her character does what her character wants to do. Now, it doesn't all play out. And I think that's the unraveling of the movie, which I think is as clever as the contrivance. But I really like that main character. That was actually a very thoughtful character that as much of the, as the contrivance was going on that was kind of disposable at times, that central character kind of grounded everything for me. And I think that's why it worked so magically.
And I think that's to the movie's great credit is she comes from a place of idolizing and then it is her journey to figure out eventually where she would place that same person. And right. she kind of grows through that process.
Right.
With all of that said, didn't you find the plot divisiveness of the Greta Gerwig character a little annoying? I mean,
no.
Her voice is just unlike anyone that yes. I've ever it's met in the world.
On. It's very put on.
In, yes. And so I couldn't escape the fact that she was talking from a script as opposed to this being a real, genuine human interaction. In a lot of these scenes. And the set piece that's done in the house by, you know...
Oh, that's brilliant.
It is, but it's so...
It's the precious piece to
me. It can feel very forced.
That's the piece that I think came across really? As a little precious.
For me,
that whole setup with her being there for the reasons that she's there,
yeah.
with the characters and her relationship to those characters, seemed so highly improbable to me that it was almost farcical.
It was. I was just going to say, it played like slapstick.
Yeah.
It was like complete slapstick. And isn't that great?
I mean, well, I think it is, but I think it made it a bit precious. I think it was almost overwritten.
I didn't get a slapstick tone of the... Like, this wasn't kind of a rip-roaring comedy for me. So I think I was coming at it more from the angle of it being, you know, a drama with some observational things to say about life. And then you get this scene here that is almost out of a sitcom. If you assemble the characters in the way that they are assembled under those circumstances, it was like, really?
It seemed to me like that, and that's a good portion of the movie. I think that's a middle piece of the movie. Yeah. It must run at least, what, half an hour to 45 minutes at least?
Two.
Yeah, it's act two of the movie. That to me played like Noel Coward or played like, you know, Shakespeare or somebody, you know, who is, it's all artifice, but it's so well staged. It felt like a play where somebody comes in, somebody else leaves, the wrong people see each other. They're like, you thief. And they're like, no, you thief.
Right.
You know, there's so much of that. And you know.
And I'm not saying it wasn't fun. So just be clear.
And it also reminded me of a lot of Robert Altman movies. Because a lot of his movies, if you look at like Nashville, or even if you look at that Prairie Home Companion movie, it's about all these characters who are talking at once. And you kind of have to kind of, you know, they're... And if you don't do it right, it'll come off as just anarchic, like disorganized.
Chaos. Yeah.
But a lot of characters are talking together, but they're kind of building some kind of a harmony through all that chaos. So
And I agree with you. I think it's very well done. I just think it's a little precious.
Sure,
a little bit contrived. But you're absolutely right, Yazdi. I mean, there's a lot going on there's probably about seven characters in that scene.
Probably
and for
more,
each one of them, each of their character arcs and stories are moving forward in a logical way. So it's very smart.
Yeah, there's no denying just how well crafted that was. Because that you're right, it could have been laughably bad.
Yeah.
Here's my thing though. I'm really worried, much as I love Greta Gerwig. Now, for three last films, including this, so I'm talking about Damsels in Distress, Lola Versus, and Frances Ha, she's pretty much been the same character in each one of those. I'm just worried that she's going to be typecast. Not to say that I don't love that character, but I feel she's going to end up a little bit like Meg Ryan, if she's not careful.
I mean, I feel like there's a lot of her personality in these characters.
True, which is probably why she's so good at it.
They're good casting decisions, but she's also in control here. I mean, she co-wrote this movie, and I think she did it with this type of performance in mind, and that's what she's good at. So I agree. I mean, maybe a little bit more variety from an actress like her, but she's still building a career. I mean, she's still yet to have a home run with the mainstreams, and I think
I agree.
You know, let her continue doing what she's absolutely brilliant at doing before we see her diversify.
But I fully agree with you on all of those points, and my thinking is, I think they're all of the same mold, but they are slightly different.
Of course,
you know, like Frances Ha was very different. Yeah. It was a very insecure character in Frances Ha, and it was a character which was very lost. There's nothing insecure or lost about the character here in Mistress America.
And, I think she's very lost, which is not, why she
But she's not self-evidently lost.
True.
So, you know, I mean, the first thing I wrote in my notes was that she has a very particular cadence. There was a very weird rhythm to how she talks. It seems very artificial and very put on. But I kind of grew into it because I have met people who are like that, who are so self-possessed, who think that they know everything about everything, and they are the center of attraction. I mean, center of attention anywhere they go, because they're like giving their opinion about everything. Oh, you know, this sushi is the worst and you should never eat.
That's no way to talk about Joe Yassi.
But haven't you met? And then
I shall defend him.
But eventually, Joe, it's not you. I know a few other people.
It's okay. We know we're talking about Rashmi.
No, but seriously,
guys, I'm proud of it.
But eventually, over a period of time, while initially you're so amazed by this person who knows everything,
eventually
you start seeing through them. That's a hard thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it
is. I hope you're not friends with those people, Yassi.
No. Well, no, we knew those characters in every stage of like in work, in play, in college, in school. I mean, there was always that person that everyone just seemed to be kind of drawn to because they were so together and cool. And you know, when you examine it a little further and you examine the real, you know, the friendships that they had, they weren't there. But anyway.
Okay. Anything else to say on this one? Yes. Yeah, I know you're going to have some other stuff to say on this one.
I mean, just about Greta Gerwig. You know, she's been in movies now. By the way, it's interesting. We were talking earlier about Joe Swanberg. She started her career in Mumblecore. She was in a series of three movies with Joe Swanberg. I think she was dating him or was married to him or something. But she's been around the block for a long time, and Hollywood doesn't know what to do with her. She was, she was the female lead in that remake of Arthur with
Russell Brand.
So Hollywood doesn't know what to do with her, and the best they can do right now is they're shunting her towards television. She's supposed to play the female lead in the spin-off of How I Met Your Mother, and you know, just like Viola Davis. I mean, these are great actors, accomplished actors that are being pushed towards television, and I'm glad that she's kind of taking her career in her own hands, and through Frances Ha and through this movie, is kind of saying, I'm going to write and I'm going to create my own characters. And so I think the world of her.
I do too, but I do think that there's a mainstream, she's going to have a little bit of a hard time doing what, you know, somebody maybe like Kristen Wiig did with, you know, the Bridesmaids kind of character. She needs a hit like that for her to become a household name, and she absolutely deserves to be.
Yeah. I mean, my only small quirk with this movie, it's really, really minor, had a ton of 80s music, which I didn't understand. I didn't get the reference. I mean, other than Noah Baumbach must love 80s music. But it was weird to me that in a modern day movie, we've got this whole 80s soundtrack, just didn't fit. That's my minor quirk. Just took me out at the moment. But other than that, I'll start summing up again. I'll give it my score. So I think this is another great offering from the Noah Baumbach, Greta Gerwig team. Easily a 7 out of 10 for me. Yazdi.
Like I said at the outset, I think this movie is worthy of great admiration just for its script. I mean, you know, I have like 3 pieces of dialogue I wrote down because I couldn't bear to forget them. They were so good.
Read one.
I need someone I can love, not keep up with. that's funny, you know, but it's also profound. That's really true. And then, you know, there's one time where she's talking with her nephew and, you know, he's trying to solve a problem in algebra. And she says, you know, X can be down with anything. You know, even as I'm saying it, it sounds stupid. But the way she says it, it's hilarious because she's given a character to X, which all, every child struggles with trying to find out. So I think this movie has a brilliant script. And you know, as luminous an actor as Greta Gerwig might be, I think ultimately a greater contribution might be as that stealth screenwriter that Hollywood will be all too late in recognizing.
Mm.
You know, I think she can really write amazing stuff. Maybe not a full detailed plot, but the dialogue is really great. And I think I've been a huge fan of Noah Baumbach's, you know, through thick and thin, through all the movies he's made. But I think his game has gone up of late. And I think it's not just coincidence that it's gone up because he started collaborating with Greta Gerwig. I love this movie so much. It's how independent cinema should be. An easy 8 out of 10. 8.5 out of 10, which I'm going to back down to 8.
Joe?
Yeah, I had a lot of fun with this one overall. I mean, I think the movie has just a few too many forced, contrived moments to it. Now, that's a matter of flavor, I think. If you like that kind of stuff, then great. But like you guys, I very much admire how Noah Baumbach handles this type of material. Mm-hmm. He does it in a way that just lends it some credibility, some reality that could otherwise take a batshit crazy moment and you know, just ruin a movie with it. So very impressive direction. Love Greta Gerwig to bits in this. I'm going to give it a slightly stingy 7. I did enjoy it very, very much in the moment.
Okay.
Movie number 2 is what I think I introduced at the beginning of the podcast as Digging for Dirt, but it's actually Digging for Fire. So I'm going to blame Rashmi for that because it's written here on the whiteboard as Digging for Dirt.
Oh, is that what I wrote?
Well, and I was reading off that.
to your credit, though, I think Digging for Dirt would be just an apt... Just
Correct.
As apt a title for the movie as Digging for Fire.
I think I was thinking about Chores.
So we didn't see this at the movie theater.
We were lucky enough to see a screener
at home, which I didn't get the chance to watch, unfortunately. So
and Digging for Fire is playing right now in your independent cinemas, and it's also available for download on your cable or as well as on iTunes and any of the other video on demand platforms.
So just by way of a very brief introduction, it is, as we said earlier in the podcast, a movie by Joe Swanberg, writer-director who I have a lot of respect for. He, like I say, made a terrific movie a couple of years ago, Drinking Buddies. He did that Christmassy one. Happy Christmas, which was also kind of, you know, great fun. The movie stars Jake Johnson in this movie, so another longtime collaborator of his, and I'll briefly read the somewhat lengthy synopsis here, but Tim and Lee are married with a young child. The chance to stay at a fancy home in Hollywood Hills is complicated by Tim's discovery of a bone and rusty old gun in the yard. Tim is excited by the idea of a mystery, but Lee doesn't want him to dig any further, preferring that he focus on the family taxes, which he promised to do weeks ago. This disagreement sends them on separate and unexpected adventures over the course of a weekend as Tim and his friends seek clues to the mystery while Lee searches to the answers to the bigger questions of marriage and parenthood. So, guys, what did you think of this?
Okay, so the analogy for me with this movie is like, you know, when you have that scab and you keep picking at it, that's like, for me, the perfect analogy of this movie. Although it's fun to watch and the acting is good, it's all very implausible and it goes to crazy town very quickly.
I like this movie. I agree with everything you've said, but I think it goes to crazy town to make a point. It has a few things to say about, and I think this is, so this was co-written by Jake Johnson and by Joe Swanberg. I think Joe Swanberg's going through this period in his life when he's struggling with what marriage means and how do you deal with, you know, how do you deal with your personal identity as you are taking care of a child. And a lot of that is seeped into this movie. And there is a wonderful fluidity about the movie. And I think that the word fluid kept coming to my mind as I was watching about it, because a lot happens in this movie. It goes to crazy town. People do weird things. But it's kind of trying to be superficial, but still saying a lot of things which are buried underneath. And I think this movie might be one of the great commentaries on the state of marriage in the world right now.
See, I think that's what depresses me about these sort of movies, is that it's very easy to sit back and say, this is the state of marriages today. And to me, I say, pants. I don't think that's the state of marriage today. I think what that is a consequence of is a society that tells you that relationships and marriage and life should be a certain way, and people having this unrealistic expectation of what life is. So it depresses me when I see movies about people who are so disappointed with their life and their marriage and having kids, etc., etc. I think that it's interesting that the Duplass brothers are doing exactly the same thing. Mm-hmm. And as I'm watching the movie, I almost thought, oh my God, did Jay and Mark have something to do with this movie? And they don't. But it's got that same tone, Joe. I mean, you didn't get to see the movie, and I know you like this writing team and acting team. I just think, for me, it was all too contrived. It has a huge cast of people in very small roles that come and go. And it becomes more of a game than anything that actually moves the story forward. So I came away feeling very disappointed by it. I expected more from this cast. It has Rosemary DeWitt, who I love, I think is a great actress. It has people like Melanie Lynskey in it, who we all love. And again, she's playing that same character, you know, the kind of disappointed parent living in Hollywood. Disappointed. That's this whole movie is about people who seem to be either disappointed in their relationships or looking for something outside of it. So this almost seems like an ad for Ashley Madison.
I didn't find the movie depressing or disappointing at all. I think it was just being realistic and saying you can't be perfect parents and you can't be perfect spouses to each other. And everybody needs a day off to hang out with your friends.
But it gives the characters, and I'm really defensive about this stuff because it makes me really upset. But nothing in this movie says, you know what? Your marriage, your relationship, your life is a mess because none of you are trying. Giving up in every single facet. You see a ton of people that come in and go out, and they're all people who've like given up on everything, it feels to me.
That's not how I saw it. I saw it as a movie about, on the face of it, you can say nothing happens in this movie. It's just about a weekend where, you know, the husband and the wife and the kid, they spend their weekend in different ways. And I think what Joe Swanberg is doing, he probably makes his movie for $50,000, maybe $100,000. This is clearly shot at the home of a friend.
Yeah,
and he's called in favors from everybody he knows. So Anna Kendrick shows up, Orlando Bloom shows up, Sam Rockwell shows up,
yeah.
Brie Larson shows up, Judith Light shows up, Sam Elliott shows up, Chris Messina shows up, you know, Mike Birbiglia shows up. And I think they're all making up their characters as they're going. Now, do I condone of their behaviors? No, but I think what it's saying is right now, the way things are, it's hard to be perfect anything. And it kind of uses this device of somebody finding, a bone and this gun to kind of, that's a metaphor for some kind of a criminal investigation into relationships. I mean, he is digging to find more, and he's in a way digging, they'll end up digging about their own relationship. And if you remember, Men, Women and Children was a movie we saw, year.
Which was great.
We'll come back.
But Adam Sandler was in that movie with Rosemary DeWitt. That was one of the five or six different strands of movies. And what happens to Jake Johnson and Rosemary DeWitt again in this movie is very similar to what happens in Men, Women, and Children.
Right.
The husband and wife who kind of, almost without knowing, kind of drift apart. And then they have to reevaluate. They don't even drift apart from each other. They're just presented with circumstances and they have to decide in the moment what's valuable to them. And they do make that decision. It's irrelevant what decisions they make. But I like that. It's not judging these characters particularly. It's very fluid. It's like, you know, sometimes you go out and have drinks with somebody and you know, maybe you should say, you shouldn't say some things that you do because you're married to someone else. But that doesn't mean it doesn't happen.
But unlike men, women, and children, Yassi, this had no bite. At least men, women, and children committed and had a darkness and a bite that allowed you to understand the context of that world. It had a richness of that world. This was also frivolous and disposable, yet the core of it is supposed to be this deep message about finding their relationship or understanding what they love about each other. And they do some horrible things, I think, over the weekend, and then it's just all over and everything's fine. So the end didn't justify the means for me. And I just think that there were subtleties in the characters that just weren't explored enough, because we were more interested about bringing all our friends on board and having little cameos than really being focused and delving deep into, because look, the whole thing is digging for fire.
I think I need to see this one and adjudicate.
Yeah, digging for fire, yet we don't dig deep enough about their actual relationship. All we see is different people coming in and commenting and being plot devices
I think if you would have dug deeper, it would have become heavy-handed. It would have been a moralizing preaching, like, you bad wife, how dare you go and kiss a stranger one evening after you're very drunk. And I don't think the movie intends to do that. It recognizes those characters from a place of no judgment. It is saying, you know, she went out for a drink and things happened, and you know, she happened to kiss this guy, and she had the good sense to walk away after that. And this whole thing was explored even in Drinking Buddies with the Anna Kendrick character.
That's right.
But I think, and I agree, it's very lighthearted, but I think it's intentionally very fluid and very frivolous because it doesn't want to get too heavy-handed or too moral, too preachy.
But it does get moral and preachy in Mike Birbiglia's character when he comes and he says, hey, what are you doing? I'm going to be friends with you and your wife, and then what are we going to do when we're all out?
So he represents... He represents...
Time out.
No, but he represents the person...
Clearly.
...in life who is judgmental. So how many people do we know saying, oh, I saw my neighbor coming in by herself alone at 5 p.m. and, you know, her husband is in London. You know, so he represents that guy. I don't think he represents the movie.
Clearly a movie where we need a third reviewer.
Yes, correct.
I will watch
and adjudicate. But does anyone have a sense for why this movie hasn't had a bigger opening? Given the quality of this cast, I mean, Rashmi, obviously you didn't, maybe it didn't score so highly with you. We'll get to scores in a minute. But when you have this caliber of talent on board in a movie, and a lot of mainstream stars here, these aren't just, you know, small independent movie stars. I would imagine that a movie like this would have no trouble, and yet we're seeing it go direct to digital, which doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad movie, but it's an interesting commercial move.
I don't know. People would rather go see Sinister 2. I don't know. You know, I don't understand this. I mean, don't get me on my soapbox. There's this movie which is running at 84% on the Tomato Meter right now. It's got a great cast. It's got Margot Robbie, Chris Pine, and Chiwetel Ejiofor. It's called Z for Zachariah. And it's on VOD, it's on video on demand, and it's playing in two theaters. So what's going on? Why do people not want to go and see a movie like that versus go and see some shitty horror movie, which is a, you know, inferior sequel? I don't know. I don't understand what's driving the movie business. Yeah. It disappoints me.
Okay, so there's no obvious...
To me personally, though, Yassi, I mean, you clearly, Joe, you've heard Yassi and I completely come from different ends on this movie, and I'm sure our scores will represent how we feel about the movie. To me personally, it doesn't represent anything different, and I'm not sure who the audience is, right? Is it for the 20-something crowd who are kind of dating? It's not quite the right date night movie, and it's not quite your Friday night buddy comedy. So I'm not sure where its audience living. It's not a baby boomer movie. I'm not sure who the audience is. If it's depressing if it's us. Because if that's what we got to watch about the state of marriages and relationships, my God, I'm going to kill myself.
But see, I don't think teenagers should only watch horror movies.
I don't want them to watch this.
And I don't think older people should only watch Learning to Drive.
No,
so my thing is, there are good movies and bad movies, and the right people should find it. I think the audience for this is all those people who watch the Duplass Brother movies. So all those people who watch The One That I Love, for example, I think this movie is for them. And the ones who saw Drinking Buddies.
But those are such more superior movies.
Okay, whoa. Let's wrap it up. So, scores.
Yes, you go first.
So, Rush, we will have the final say.
Okay, I'll go first.
No, no, no.
I'm going to have the final say. No, that's fine. Next podcast.
No, that's fine. I like how lighthearted the movie is, and yet it doesn't pull any punches. It refuses to judge its characters, so I'm not going to judge them either. I do find a lot of things that a lot of people do. I personally would not be doing it if my relationship with somebody was very strong, but I'm not in a place of judgment. And even though these people come and go, Anna Kendrick has never played kind of an all-out slutty character. You know, Orlando Bloom, as I've never seen Orlando Bloom like this before. You know, as small as their roles are. So I like that it kind of frees them, all these actors, by playing like a 5-minute role. They're able to do things. Brie Larson, I haven't seen her do this kind of role before. So I was happy. I kind of liked its energy. And it's the kind of movie where after it ends, you kind of think more and try to figure it out. So I liked it a lot. It's a fine movie. 8 out of 10.
Rashmi.
Okay, so overall, a little too far-fetched and crazy with edges of preciousness. I mean, watch this if you really have nothing else to watch and all the powers died and you can't even read a book by flame. A good movie about relationships, I think that's a bit more meaningful, is The One I Love, which we've already reviewed some weeks ago. I mean, look, it's not a terrible movie. I just don't like the message it's giving. It's very one-sided. I think there are much better ones in this genre. You know, 4 out of 10.
Whoa. Okay.
That's good. I mean, I think it's if a movie kind of...
It definitely polarizes.
Right, it polarizes. It's doing something.
Well, I'm going to have to see this one and just see where I sit. I think I'm going to side more with Yazzie just by the sound of the discussion here.
I agree. I think you will.
I like the beats and the tone of this director anyway. So
yeah, I think you'll like it more than I did. It's interesting because, you know, Joe said, as Joe said, he didn't have time to watch the screener. And then you said to me, should I watch it? And I was like, nah, don't waste your time. So maybe because it's a long weekend, you should watch it. And maybe at the next podcast, you can give us your opinion.
Oh, sorry.
I think I'm just being hard on it because it's just too... I'm just sick of every person in the movie being so down on their relationship. Everyone does something wrong in my mind, but
no. Sam Elliott doesn't, Chris Messina doesn't, Sam Rockwell doesn't.
But they're all the single men.
I mean, Brie Larson doesn't do anything wrong.
Yeah, she does.
No, or Anna Kendrick.
We'll talk after. Okay. Oh, come on, Anna Kendrick.
Well, she's just kind of just showing up. We've never seen a slutty Anna Kendrick. I'm happy to see a slutty Anna Kendrick. Anyway, the one other thing I want to talk is for those people who are big fans of the movie Obvious Child last year. Did anybody?
Yes.
You know, everybody loved it. You know,
I hated it.
People were hoping that Jenny Slate, there was a big push to see if Jenny Slate might get a Best Awful Actor movie. Nomination.
Thank God.
But the two main actors from Obvious Child, Jenny Slate and her character husband, who she marries to, they show up as those characters in this movie, which is lovely. Kind of an in-joke. Thought it was cool. A cute in-joke, yes. But anyway. So, are we... We're done, I think, with this podcast.
I think we're done.
Yeah, I felt like I needed to step in there and get you a pair of boxing gloves. We were going at it. So, yeah, let us know what you think of these movies. Mail at moviewallahs.com, facebook.com/moviewallahs, twitter.com/moviewallahs as well. Until our next episode. Too many movies, too little time. Good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.